You have a choice to turn an obstacle into an opportunity or not. We have a choice. That is our choice. We can sit around and talk about how negative things are and think doom and gloom, or we can turn an obstacle into an opportunity, move forward because we have this trust in an almighty God that's wonderful, and use it as an opportunity to touch other people, tell them about Jesus, and just get better.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Life Reframe podcast. I'm Lauren Morgan.
And I'm Rick Dunn.
Good to see you, Rick.
It's great to see you, too. You know, I woke up this morning and had this thought. I can't believe we get to do this. This is such a gift to you and us and our team that supports us and our listeners. So just a lot of shout outs and thank yous as we head into a new year.
We didn't think we would see this day come. I'm not going to lie. We may, even recording this, it's like, well, it may or may not drop. We'll see if we get there because it's to be determined, but we are here.
We are. And hopefully it's a good day. And we get a chance now to kind of dive back into one of our new types of episodes today.
Yeah. So we started doing a new series called A Life Reframed, and we've done one episode. This is going to be our second one. The first one we did was with Luke Hochaver. And if you haven't heard that, you definitely want to go back and listen to it.
So powerful.
He's got a really powerful story. And today we have got a guest who we're just so excited about, and he is going to help us with this second episode. So today we've got Russell Bivin with us. Hi, Russell.
Hey, how are you? It's good to be here.
It's so good to have you. I'm so excited.
Again, I can't believe we get to do this. For folks that don't know, Russell is a local TV personality, anchor, and reporter for WBIR TV. Lauren, you've worked with Russell on set and done some things along the way with Russell in studio. So you worked with him. And Russell is one of the favorite people in my life that God has blessed me with. I just love you and love that we're going to get to talk today.
Well, right back at you. I think the world of both of you. And I love that you and I get a chance to coach basketball together. Yeah, and we've grown close over the years when we're on the road coaching different tournaments and everything. And so you've just been a tremendous friend and a mentor for me.
Well, we have laughed together, cried together.
Yes, we have.
We have stressed out together. We've won together. We haven't lost too much together.
We haven't lost too much.
I'm just going to name that. We haven't lost too much, but we've done that. And Russell, the thing that I love about you as my friend, it's interesting, Lauren. I was in a restaurant one before all the COVID reality, so it was okay. And Russell walked in the restaurant, and I immediately just went up and gave him a big hug and said, "Hey, good to see you, Coach." And I sat down and the guy having lunch with me said, "You really love him, don't you?" I said, "I really love him." And I'm so glad our listeners just to get to hear what God's been up to in your life, Russell, and that you're so good at just sharing that. We hope you'll enjoy this conversation with us.
Yeah, well, I feel the same. And I think I got to tell you, this has been such a nice outlet for me to listen to. I love how, I mean, the conversations you all have and just... I always feel better when I come away from listening to this podcast. So thank you guys for doing it.
Oh, thanks for saying that, Russell. That's so nice. I have to say, I'm so excited. I kind of regularly went on WBIR for a little while and would do like a mom's spot thing. And the first time I ever went, you were just like the nicest person. Like you just...
Well, I hope I was.
You're so nice. But you know, you're one of those people we always see you on TV, and I had never met you in person before, and you were just acted like you knew me, like you cared to talk to me. You were just so, so nice. And then I had seen you. So your wife was Jack's preschool teacher when he was 4 years old. And so you showed up to some preschool thing and saw you there, and you're like, "Hey, I know you." Like you remembered me. And I'm like, he sees like however many people every week. And I just like couldn't believe you remembered me. And so anyway, you're the nicest. I have always been a huge fan.
Oh, well, thanks.
And then your wife is just amazing.
She's the amazing one.
And you have great kids wonderful. Too. Tell us just quick. We like for our listeners to know a little bit about our folks. Tell us about your three kids.
Yeah. Alan is our oldest. He's a sophomore at University of Tennessee. You've had a chance to coach him on and off.
He's great
in basketball, and he played baseball, and now he works with a football program
at the University of Tennessee.
Yeah, so he's having a great time with that. Our second son is a junior. He's a high school basketball player at West High School, and again, Rick has been a tremendous influence in his life. And
you can't say this because you're the dad, but I'm going to say, talk about a player that you want to coach, Lauren. We would be on the road playing in tournaments. He would get up in the morning before everyone else and go out and shoot before the day even started, knowing we were going to play probably three games that day. And so just a great young man and real excited about his future as well.
I'll say I've only gotten one technical foul in my probably 26 years of coaching. I was next to Rick Dunn on the bench on Palm Sunday. And I thought, what have I just done? And our Will looked over at me like, did you just lose the game? And he hit two free throws. And I'm like, son, thank you. But it was on Palm Sunday next to Rick Dunn.
Rick probably looked over at you and was like, good job.
No, you know what he said? He said, hey, it's all right. You're okay. And I thought, oh, surely he doesn't mean that.
That is hilarious.
Oh, it was unreal. Well, it was unreal.
We can't go down the path, but the stories we could tell.
Are pretty funny. And then we have our little girl is a freshman at West High School. And
I can't believe she's a freshman.
I know. It's crazy, Coach. It's crazy. And just the love of my life. And so we're really blessed to have.
I think she was still in elementary school.
I think she was, yeah.
That is crazy.
Yeah.
Wow. Everybody's so old now.
I know.
Watch yourself over there.
I mean, I'm thinking about it and I'm like, well, Jack is older now. He was four. It makes sense. But you have a great family. And man, well, we're excited to hear more about your story today and the way, you know, for everybody listening, just since it's been a little while since we did our first episode, this is just an opportunity to hear stories from people because we believe there's so much power in stories. And we believe that on a personal level, we believe that in hearing other people's stories, and there's power in what we go through being just something that happens to us or for us to be able to reframe it. And so that's kind of the idea behind doing this and setting it up as an intentional series. So we're really excited to hear what you have to share with everybody today, Russell. I don't know a lot. I mean, I know the things I've shared with people, right, but I don't know a lot of your story.
Well, so let's start back in 1972. I was born and
we're going to be here for 5 hours.
That's right. I grew up in a great home with great brother and sister and great parents, went to church, did all that kind of thing. You know, I knew church was important. I didn't really know the relationship part of it until I met this girl in high school. We were 13, but at 15, we started dating. And she said, I go to this church. We grew up in Atlanta. And I decided to go to church with her. I didn't, not to get closer to the Lord. I just wanted to sit next to her.
Right. Get closer to her.
And all of a sudden, the minister gets up and it's like he's speaking directly to me. Mm. I'm the only one in the congregation when there's 1,000 people there. I was the only one. It kind of hit me that night. There's something I've missed, and it's the relationship part of it. And we went back that night, and then we went Wednesday, and then I couldn't wait to get there Sunday. And again, it was like he was preaching straight to me, and I came to accept the Lord. And one day he said, he announced to the congregation, he was going to be moving to the hills of East Tennessee with his wife to start a children's ranch in Ware's Valley. And his name's Jim Wood, and he runs Ware's Valley Ranch.
That's really? Who it was. Wow.
And and that 15-year-old girl is my wife today, Rhonda. Wow. Her mother led me in Bible studies, and you know, my mother would sing hymns and teach me how to sing and do all that. And so, you know, the women in my life have just played an enormous, enormous role. Yeah. And just incredible that it was Jim Wood.
It is incredible.
That is a small world.
It really is.
Yeah. Wow. So for folks who might be listening or in here, Ware's Valley Ranch is maybe 45 minutes from Knoxville, to be about right. Mm-hmm. So, and you wound up, I know we'll get to that part of the story, but you've actually wound up in East Tennessee yourself. So you knew Rhonda from age 13.
Age 13, eighth grade. We met her last name, maiden name is Borland. So we were in the same homeroom and she coached, she could not keep her eyes off me.
I know.
So I just held her off for 2 years.
I'm sure it was a hard
thing. Do we need to bring Rhonda in?
No, we don't. In fact, she won't listen to this either. And and we stayed together.
That's a great story.
Cool.
Yeah. That's a great story. Now you were super involved in athletics in high school and played in college. Tell us a little bit about how that worked into, it's a huge part of who you are. It's been a part of your career.
Yeah.
Tell us how that was working in your life at that time.
I think really at that time it was too much about athletics and that became my identity. And so I think when I became a Christian, that helped balance that out because it was all about basketball. Everything was about basketball and winning and losing. And I didn't take losing very well. And Rhonda helped me with that part of it. Mm-hmm. It got a little easier, but I still didn't like it, but I accepted it and learned from it.
That's what you never like. Losing. No, I don't. That's okay. Yeah. Just accept and learn from it.
Yeah. There you go. But, you know, people are like, well, didn't you play at Alabama? I'm like, no, I didn't really play at Alabama. I was on the reserve team at Alabama, so I didn't really do anything.
But you were on the basketball team.
Well, no, I was on the reserve team. And I talk to Coach Sanderson still probably every month, Wimp Sanderson, for those listening that are over the age of 40. And Wimp's about 81 or 82 now. But I always say that, you know, I let Robert Horry and Latrell Sprewell get the rings, and I just kind of sat back and made sure I didn't interrupt anybody.
There you go.
So did you and Rhonda both go to Alabama?
We did. Okay. We did.
How did you, so you grew up in Atlanta. How did you end up at Alabama?
I had a bunch of family that had gone to Alabama. My uncle was a doctor with Coach Bryant. And so I was always interested in Alabama. I was looking at some smaller schools. I really thought I was going to go play at a smaller school and thought, well, heck, I'll just go to Alabama and see if I can end up walking on. And end up being put on the reserve team. Wimp left, and I went to downtown Tuscaloosa to the Y and started coaching and haven't stopped.
So you're still in touch with Coach Sanderson, but yes. I know you're in touch with Coach Curry too, who was a football coach. So you've been, and I know you and Coach Barnes are good friends. You had a lot of really solid men in your life, coaches. Tell us a bit about that influence, because that's been very powerful, I would imagine.
It has, and it's really helped me grow as a person and as a coach. Bill Curry was the head football coach at Alabama when I was there. He was also the starting center for Vince Lombardi on the Super Bowl teams. He was a starter and captain at Georgia Tech. He was the head football coach at Georgia Tech. He played for Bobby Dodd, who played at Tennessee.
Wow.
My dad taught him. Had him in class, and so he remembers him. And so Coach Curry has always allowed me to call him for advice and talk to him. And I remember him coming to preach at Mount Vernon Baptist in Atlanta and getting to see him there too. And he spent a lot of time when I went to visit at Alabama. He's a great, great man with great principles and a great belief in the power of sports.
Yes.
And how it can draw people who don't look like each other. Don't act like each other. Doesn't matter what your name is, your bank account says, can bring you together.
Yeah.
But he's also a very strong believer. And Coach Barnes, one of my dear friends.
He's the coach at University of Tennessee.
I think that's where he is. Yeah. I think he's there.
I hope he's still there.
Yeah. Yeah. I hope he is.
We're about to have a really good season if we ever get to have
him. Yeah, that's right. And he's been great. We probably talk. Well, I know we do. We talk every day of our lives. He was at Alabama 2 years before I got there on staff.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, he was there in 87 under Coach Wimp. And he called me one day and asked if I would go on Wimp's radio show. And I said, yeah. And we started talking more about our faith and things like that and different journeys. And to that day, I don't think we've missed a day texting or talking.
That's so cool. So I don't know him. I know, obviously,
I would stay far away. Stay far away from that man.
I'm a big sports fan. And so I have heard lots of wonderful things about him. And I've heard what a strong faith he has and that sort of thing. So it sounds like he's somebody who you have a lot in common with, coaching wise, life wise.
Yeah.
Jesus wise.
Yeah,
all the ways.
I do. We both love basketball. We love, obviously he loves coaching, and I love watching him coach and learning from him. But the main thing that holds us together is our belief in Christ. And he, you know, he changed a lot probably about 10 years ago from where he was. And his children kind of came and confronted him about some things and how he was treating certain people or maybe how he was living his life. And he knew it was true. And his life changed forever.
And he openly shares about that.
He does. Right? That's, I'm not saying anything.
Right. I've read things from where he said that. And you just don't see that a lot. You don't see a lot of people in positions of power who are like, and I was humbled here. And I was doing this wrong, whatever. It's just really cool to see.
Well, you know, before COVID hit, we were all wearing these masks for a long, long time of perfection, of hiding weaknesses, everything. What I love about Coach is that he will just say what's on his mind and tell you, man, I didn't use words I should have used. I didn't do this. I should have. And I love that kind of people, because all of a sudden you're able to be vulnerable and say, gosh, here's what I'm struggling with.
Right.
And you're not being judged. You're not being, you know, dismissed. You're being loved unconditionally. And that's how we ought to live as the body of Christ. I mean, where did we get off track with that thing? I mean, how far has it gotten us to say, hey, for me, I'm a man. I'm not going to show people that I cry. I'm not going to show weakness. Where did that get me? That's gotten me nowhere. Yes. Absolutely nowhere. And it's gotten my friends nowhere. Nowhere. And so now, I mean, let's take the mask off, you know, and talk to each other. Tell each, you know, let's talk about our struggles. Because as my father-in-law said before he passed away, he said, everybody's got something. If they don't, they're a liar or they're a fool. And it stuck with me forever. And so...
That was like a bonus reframe, and it's really powerful.
So true. And Rick and I actually talk a lot. We've talked about it on the microphone, on recording. We've talked about it a lot off of recording. Vulnerability is such a powerful thing. It's such a big thing, but it's not something we see a lot. And that's why I think when you do see it in somebody, it's so attractive, and it just draws you in, because we just don't see it very often. And it's so powerful. So I love everything that you just said. That was amazing.
Well, and that's why, you know, and why I appreciate our relationship. I know I could call you and say,
right,
here's on, not because you're a pastor, because you're a friend.
Right.
And say, man, I'm feeling down today, or I got this going today. And I know you're not going to say, just pick up and get moving. Yeah. You know, you're going to love me. You're going to help me through it and walk me through it.
And one of the things, and this is a good segue too, to kind of catch up back where we're in your story, is that we've enjoyed about coaching together is we do think alike in the game, and really do think the game the same way. So we kind of catch each other's thoughts and sharpen each other. But we also believe that the most important part of coaching is loving each other and loving our players. Mm-hmm. And that's something that you value, and you've just given us this picture, this mask unmasking metaphor, which I'm just going to sit with for the rest of the day, Lauren. This is really powerful. But because you're such a coach, and I mean, it's so energizing to be around you in coaching, and that's what you were kind of started out doing. But then you wound up in broadcasting, and in sports is where you got started,
that's
right? So maybe tell us how that all happened.
Well, so I'm from Atlanta, where CNN is based. And at the time, they had all kinds of sports shows with Nick Cellini and Fred Hickman and all these guys. I can think of half of them. Jerome Jurinovich and Van Earl Wright. And
The early days of the
early days of SportsCenter was just starting.
Gotcha.
And then, so I started interning at CNN Sports, and literally they didn't have an opening. So I called upstairs to a department. It was World News. And they said, we don't have an opening. And I called and I said, how about if I clean your trash cans? They said, we don't have an opening. An hour later, they called back and said, if you're serious about cleaning the trash cans, you can work with us. Well, they didn't make me clean the trash cans, but it was World News. So I was looking at videos from like wars in Sarajevo. I mean, it was awful. But while I was up there, I'd go downstairs and say, hey, I'm working upstairs in World. And finally, Sports hired me as an intern.
I love that.
And I sat and watched games. That's all I did. I sat and watched games and wrote down the highlights, and they'd take the highlights and edit them, and it'd be on the show. And then when I got out of college, Bill McPhail was the president of CNN Sports. He brought the Masters to television. He helped bring the Olympics to television.
Really?
His brother was the GM of the Cubs.
Is that right?
McPhail.
Yeah, that's owner. Yeah, that's,
somehow we have to get the Cubs into every episode. Yeah, I know.
So that's their special bonus for you, Lauren.
So Bill hired me. He said, I'm going to hire you as a production assistant. I had just graduated. So I kind of helped out with production stuff. But while I was doing it, I'd go in the studio at like 2 a.m. when the shows were over, and I'd do these mock shows, and I'd leave them at his door every morning. And a guy got sick. a guy got sick on Headline Sports. And Steve Wrigley. And they said, you're filling in on Headline Sports. And at that time, it was 20 after and 10 till. It was a big...
Well, I remember all this. Yeah. So this is all very real to me. This is my experience, Lauren. You're like, I don't know what he's talking about.
I know exactly what you're...
Because that's when you tune in to get the sports.
Yeah. So then I filled in. I did that. And a month later, they hired me full-time for that.
Wow.
And put me on anchoring the airport network, which means I did sports on the airlines when you were in an airline.
You're so the
guy. You couldn't leave if you didn't like me. And then they put me on international sports, which was cricket and
oh my gosh,
rugby.
Would
I went
you
and
like
bought,
that?
I went and bought a book, Cricket for Idiots.
Stop.
Well, first of all, there is a book out there called Cricket for Idiots. Yeah. That's new information for our listeners.
So I was doing sports internationally, but it wasn't aired in the United States. And I told the vice president, Jim Walton, who later became president of CNN, that I wanted to do a college football show. And he started laughing. He said, well, here's the deal. We got to get you somewhere 3 years and back. And they knew of Channel 10. Somebody had interned there and went to the University of Tennessee. They knew Bob Kessling was going to become the voice of the Vols. And there would be an opening at Channel 10. So they helped me out. I get to Channel 10. And I'm supposed to be back in 3 years. And we fell in love with Channel 10 in Knoxville and didn't go back. We went back probably 7 years ago. They called, asked to come in for an interview. And we did. And I told my wife, I said, let's go back to Knoxville.
This is home.
Yeah. And I never thought I'd say that because I was born and raised in Atlanta.
Wow.
Well, and, but you think about Jim Wood came to East Tennessee. Rick Barnes winds up at East Tennessee. You just think about all the ways the orchestra and how God moved and the poor guy that got sick, right? That made this career possible. So
that's right.
I really appreciate your hustle, Russell. Like, well, that rhymes.
Yeah, well done.
That you literally would have cleaned trash cans. Like, you were not just saying, I'll clean your trash cans.
No, it was all when they said they didn't have anything. That's kind of when the competitive juices kicked in. And it was more about maybe not getting the job and more about not losing.
That's hilarious. And,
that's what we did. And when I was doing international sports, I would do it. It was doing it early in the morning. So Grand Prix and all this stuff, I'd be on the anchor desk at CNN Sports Illustrated. It was a beautiful new facility, probably only like three people there that early in the morning. And Ted Turner had a suite on the top of CNN in the Omni. And he'd come down in his boxers and newspaper on the elevator and he'd go, Braves win last night. And I'd say, yes, sir, they did. And he said, thanks. And he'd go back up to his penthouse. And I'm like, this is a weird existence. But
that is hilarious.
Yeah.
So you come to Knoxville and you, like you said, you love WBR, you love Knoxville. Like what was it? What made you stay here?
I think the people really, I didn't realize how great of a place it was. First of all, I didn't know a whole lot about Knoxville and I certainly didn't know a lot about the people, but we found there were a lot of churches and there was a lot of different, it was a great family environment. And Rhonda was pregnant with our first and I loved what I was doing. I was doing sports at Channel 10. Everybody was winning. I mean, everybody was winning from the Titans. We were getting to the Super Bowl to, you know, the football team was winning. The Lady Vols, everybody was winning. It was crazy. And then I started working at the Vol Network for Coach Fulmer's show. So I was doing just a lot of stuff that wasn't really work. It was just fun. Hmm. Then I got asked to do Live at 5. And
so how did that happen? How did you shift? Because you are not the sports guy.
Yeah, I'm not now. Yeah, I used to be. Yeah.
So how did you shift from you've had this whole perspective of sports and that? I mean,
it's kind of hard really, like from a, I mean, I'm like, here I was talking about football and now I'm talking about like bird feeders. I don't know if this is me. This is kind of weird.
But, you do it so well, though.
So it took me a while to feel comfortable and like, is this what I'm like talking about? How to make eggnog? But I was, eventually it caught on and I was still able to do some other stuff on the side to keep my sports interest going.
So they had you when that show first started, right? When it was Live at 5, right?
Right, yeah.
And now it's Live at 5 at 4.
At 3 in Crossville, yeah. When Bill Haslam left to become governor, I said, you need to come by before you leave. We have some gifts for you from the station. So he came on live with us and we wished him well. And one of the things we gave him was a photo of the three of us when he had been on the set before and it said Live at 5 at 4 at 3 in Nashville. And he said he kept it in his office till the day he left.
But this is the part that I experienced as bringing you joy in your role. One is the nature of that part of the news segment is very relational and community based. And I can tell you love being in the community, and the community loves Russell.
Oh, I've been a Russell fan since before I first met you. Oh, yeah.
It is travel with him in East Tennessee to a basketball tournament.
I'm sure people are.
And it's just like,
I'm not sure the refs like me.
Everybody else loves it. And then the other thing is, I've watched you bring that creativity and passion to the story you did about the Vol basketball team and their unity. The Perfect 10, which is a series that you do. Yeah. So what I've noticed is that, yes, you're doing that, but within that, you're bringing that heart and passion for people's stories. That seems to be super.
That's kind of my wheelhouse, I think.
It seems to be,
I'm fortunate that Channel 10 allows me to do that, to talk about my faith and to share those stories. And it really started probably within the last year, ramping up more.
You are a respected voice in the community. I mean, there was something you shared. Was it earlier this year? Was it maybe COVID related? But it was like you were, I think you were sitting at the news desks maybe. And you were like, we need to, it was like a pep talk to everybody. Like you were pretty serious.
You were coaching.
It was a coaching moment. And that thing went viral. I mean, people respect you and listen to what you have to say because you do have this deep investment in the community and you are that person. Like you acted like I mattered to you when I was probably just one of dozens of people that show, you know, coming in randomly. And that's just who you are.
Well, I will say it's who I am as a believer. It would not be who I was had I not given my life over to Christ, you know?
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about that. Cause it sounds like that your faith has really, you know, to use our word, reframed how you approach people.
Reframed, no doubt. Just empathy. Not just sympathy, but empathy for people. I think Christ has given me new eyes and a new heart for people that are hurting, and unconditional love really over the last 2 years has really been something I've tried to focus on because my dad gave me that. It was and a lot of fathers don't give that. And my dad was 47 when I was born. Mm-hmm. So he had some experience under his belt before I was born. And my mother always gave unconditional love to me, you know, regardless of what I did. I mean, they'd tell me it was wrong, but they still loved me. I knew they did. And I could tell them anything. And Christ has unconditional love for me as well. And I think has given me a heart to do that for other people. I'd like to say I'm not a judgmental person. We all are in our own ways. But anything good you see in me or can say about me is there's no doubt it's all because of the transformation.
Mm. Yeah. And that's one of the things that we've got to do together is grow together over the last 3 years.
Yeah.
I was coaching the team and Russell's son Will's playing. And then Russell became the assistant. And then we became partners. Then Russell became the head coach. And then I'm the assistant and supporting him. And
I'll say this about Rick, with the pandemic had kind of hit.
Yes.
And here we go. We're ended up going to play some AAU. We go to three different states and I knew Rick wanted to go so badly. I mean, I knew it. And I wanted him to go so badly because here we are in this crazy world and I've got these young guys and here I am, you know, I'm missing the guy that is like the guy I look up to. But I really respected what you did because, you know, like a shepherd, you needed to stay home with the flock, with your church and for those that were hurting here.
Yeah.
And I think we both knew that was just the way it had to be. I'd call you and say, here's what's going on. Right. What do you think?
And God orchestrated that.
He did. He did. It was amazing.
Because it was the right time for you to do that. And that again, to me is, I've watched what you're describing when I've watched this in Russell. You talked about, well, it's kind of in the last year I started telling these stories. It seems to me like you're moving into a place of life where you're seeing your kind of your platform of influence as ways you can deepen your impact, whether that's coaching the community, telling people stories, modeling that empathy and unconditional love through a TV program that reaches a lot of people, but probably they're not expecting I'm going to get that in a news broadcast. So I think that's a really powerful thing to offer at a time when we're all hoping and looking for somebody to care about us, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Especially obviously now and looking for some type of hope and looking for some type of good news, because certainly you don't get it a lot on the local stuff. And that can be hard, you know, on the news anchors and the people in the news as well, to go in and talk about it for 3 hours and have it hang over you and then leave and try to get going again, you know. But God has provided the energy and the hope that he's already won this whole thing anyway.
Yeah.
I just think it's so amazing that you being in the position that you're in, because we're in this time now where you're talking about the stress on the people in that role, on the news anchors and stuff, where everything being spoken about the news in general is that it's fake or you can't believe it, or it's just such a bad rap right now. And so for us, we are very blessed that we have you and to be, you are real and authentic,
trustworthy,
and trustworthy and vulnerable. And that's just a gift to our community that people get to see that, especially during this time, and to know like you're there and we can count on you and rely on you. But I'm sure that is a huge burden for you and all your coworkers and those in your industry to bear during this time.
Yeah, it's not been easy just talking to other anchors and reporters across, you know, even town. You know, we're called to be a light in the darkness, and that's what I'm going to do. I'm fortunate to have great coworkers who are great believers. Todd and I get together at 3:15 every day and pray. And Todd Howe, our meteorologist, and
you do that every day.
He's as many days as we can, which is pretty much every day. But he's the real deal. And
I had a privilege to coach one of his sons when he was playing basketball years ago.
Oh yeah, that's right, that's right.
And got to know Todd and Stuart.
Yeah.
And yep. I love Stuart because you never had to say, hey, Stuart, be aggressive.
Oh my gosh.
It just happened. Yeah. Those are my favorites. By the way, Stuart, please don't hurt that player. That was
right.
But I saw that in Todd as well. And this maybe as a coach, because it is your heart. And we have listeners who, you know, it's hard. It's just everybody's hard. It's hard if you're in the news world. It's hard if you're in the medical field. It's hard if you're a parent.
A teacher.
I mean, we can go on and on. And this, it seems like there's a message on your heart, Russell, about maybe reframing the moment in terms of, hey, this is like the time to be loving well, right? I mean, that's kind of what I hear you saying.
No
like
question.
There's no better time than right now to practice this, whatever your moment is or platform.
Yeah, and I think you're right. And, you know, what I tell the players, and I tell myself a lot, the same thing is, you have a choice to turn an obstacle into an opportunity or not. We have a choice. That is our choice. We can sit around and talk about how negative things are and think doom and gloom, or we can turn an obstacle into an opportunity, move forward because we have this trust in an almighty God that's wonderful, and use it as an opportunity to touch other people, tell them about Jesus, and just get better. So if it's a basketball, use quarantine, the time when you had to quarantine. Don't look at it as an obstacle. Look at it as an opportunity. I'm going to get better physically. I'm going to get in more shape. I'm going to watch more film, and I'm going to come out better, because nobody's going to stay the same. You're going to get worse or you're going to get better. And it's your choice on how you're going to do it, because it's going to happen one way or another.
That is so important.
So I think even as individuals in our community, or even as believers, we can use this obstacle as an opportunity. My daughter, who's 14, here's the way she's done it. My mother-in-law passed away suddenly at the age of 70. Incredible woman in my life, in our lives, incredible. And must have had 5 Bibles that were so filled with different things. So during the pandemic, my daughter began to write a devotion every day, and she's never stopped. She writes one every single day. She has done it for, I don't know how many months that was, 6 or 7 months or however many months, 8, 10 months. And she sends it to me every night at the same time. And that's how she used that obstacle as an opportunity to get closer to the Lord during this time. And then share it with other people.
Because you don't hold something that's great.
You don't hold a great gift. There's no sense in it. You know, the only thing you have is what you give away. Mm. So she then sends it out to her. Well, she sends it to her daddy. And then she sends it to a certain number of friends. And whether they respond or not doesn't matter. It does not matter what the other person does. It matters that she is sharing something from her heart and has done that. And I think really, and her devotions knocked me on my face at times, because they're like, oh geez, you know, they really get you, you know, and are good for me at the right time. But, you know, I think there's always in life, we can use things that are hard for good.
Yeah. So you could use I'm too young, or I don't have the opportunities I had before, or this job is harder, or things aren't working, or as we deal with at the church, this isn't how we've always been used to being able to lead our people.
Right.
Or let's be stronger. Let's see what God's up to. And the way you're describing it is, it's paying attention to what he's entrusted to you that you can share. Like everybody's got something, right?
Everybody, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's just such a powerful word.
Incredible. And I, first of all, I'm blown away by her and I would like to know if I can get on that list.
Yes, you can.
Devotionals, because that's incredible. You know, I think one of the things, hearing you talk, one of the things that I'm guilty of this year is using a lot of like surviving language, like we're just going to survive this. We're going to survive this quarantine, or we're going to survive this holiday season, or we're going to survive whatever. And I feel like what you're saying is it's thriving. It's not surviving it. And really, you know, it makes me reflect on what did I do during that time? Like, what was I doing, or what will I do next time? I know, you know, one of the things that especially the high school students, I don't have a high schooler, but I've heard that there's a lot of them having to go in quarantine and come back out and possible exposure, going back in quarantine kind of thing. And so I love that you're sharing this message with them, like with your athletes, your kids' friends, but also I think it's applicable to me as an adult. I think it's applicable to everybody across the board. Like, even when we're past this pandemic season, there are going to be times where really hard things are happening, or we're in situations we don't want to be in. And what are we doing in that time? Like, it's just really, you're making me think a lot. It's really powerful.
It's funny you say that, because I was probably maybe a little older than you. And we were going to the beach and we had the three kids, and one was, are we there yet? The other one was like pooping without a diaper on, and the other one was crying. And I thought, oh my gosh, this is going to be the longest 6 hours. And the Lord just said, don't just enjoy the beach, enjoy the ride to the beach. And I thought, there's no way that's happening. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to enjoy the ride between this exit to that exit. And my golly, if it didn't work, I just decided to enjoy being present, because there's a lot of times you can be present and you're not really present. You know, like you can go a practice of your kid and be on the phone the whole time. You're not present. Yeah. You are not present. You know, you put the phone away and you pay attention to your child, you're present. And that ride to the beach became as much fun as the beach, because I decided I'm here with my family in a little nest. Like, who can complain about this? Even if it smells and it's crazy, This is awesome. and to be present and enjoy all of it. Just enjoy all of it.
You love that.
I'm thinking Russell might need to become a reframing consultant to our podcast, because you just bring so much perspective and it's
a life coach.
That's, thank you.
Can you be my life coach?
He's a life coach. No, you don't want me as a life coach. I promise you that.
Listen, after this is done, I'm going to run a couple situations by both of you and you'll tell me what I need to do.
Yeah. Oh, that's just such a gift. And, you know, one of the things that, I'd ask you if we could add a little, like a little bonus mini episode.
Yeah.
Because Lauren hasn't heard this story, but in the middle of all that we went through in the summer of 2020, and you and I both have such a heart for the importance of racial love, unconditional love for one another across the races, across cultures. And one of the things we love about basketball is our players are brown, black, white. But they're all one team. We love that moment. So we were talking about that and our heart and concern for our black young athletes, but also for our white young athletes and how they're processing all that was going on. And then you told me a story about your mom. And I was like, you have got to be kidding me. So could you tell that story? Because it actually illustrates exactly what we've just been talking about, that you can use your moment. And you may think, I don't have anything to offer. And all of a sudden you find out you're in the part of something God's up to. So would you share that story?
Yeah, my mother grew up in Ellic City, Alabama, went to Montevallo, which at the time was an all-girls school. And she got out of school and she got offered the job in Atlanta at the all-white YWCA as the teenage director. And it was a big deal. She was going to the big city. And she got there. It was located in downtown Atlanta, so there were a lot of banks around it. Coca-Cola was down there. The city was just moving and grooving, and they had a cafeteria. All the businessmen would go to the YWCA to eat lunch at the cafeteria and then go back to their businesses. And she was the teenage director, and you know, she saw that only white people were allowed in the restaurant, and she had only white girls, and that was kind of the way it was. But she and several other women, it was not just my mother, decided this isn't right. This just isn't.
And what year is this?
This was in the 60s.
Oh, yeah, I love this. And, just love this.
So she called the teenage director at the all-black YWCA in Atlanta and said, why don't we go to camp together? And she said, well, Dora, that's illegal. And she said, well, why don't we go to camp together? So they met at the bottom of the mountain at midnight and got on the same bus and rode up and spent a week at camp together. Nobody knew about it. Dr. Barbara
Hatton. Don't you just love this story, Lauren?
I actually found out that Dr. Barbara Hatton, that used to be the president at Knoxville College, was one of those little girls on that trip. She said it was the time of my life.
Wow.
And I remember her saying that your mother and those other women from the all-white YWCA gave something to me that I can never repay. I couldn't do anything for them, but they were doing this for us. Well, they came back and they decided that they wanted to open up their restaurant, not just to whites, but to blacks. And there was many women did this, not just my mom. But the minute that got out that they were going to do this, they got bomb threats on a daily basis. My father at Georgia Tech would have to go pick mama up and leave. And the police chief was all for what was going to take place. They were going to open it up. And he told my mother, hey, I've got plainclothes officers all around Atlanta. He said, Dora, if anything happens, you hit those blinds on the window and I'll have people in there immediately. And Dr. King and his entourage were the first guests.
That's the greatest
story. My mom said, I welcome Dr. King. I shook his hand and he said, thank you. And she said they walked in and everybody else walked out. Mm-hmm. And she said about 2 weeks later, everybody was eating together.
Wow.
And it became the first desegregated restaurant in all of Atlanta and they didn't have one problem. Mm. And
I love your mom. I love her.
Well, you know, I just think about the risk that she took and the death threats and the horrible things that were said to her when people would call down and that she just took, but she realized that, and the other women, that there's so much more to the person than the skin. There's the spirit that matters. And when you start inviting that into your lives, then you have a lot of people to love and can put into your life. I remember you saying something to our players, I'll never forget. It's if you have just a few people you're touching in your life, you're going to have a very small world. If it's just about you, your world's going to be very small. But if you start making your world about other people and you start living for others, your world's going to be huge. And the opportunities to affect other people is going to be great. That's the world I want to live in. That's what you said. That's the world that I want to live in. And all the players are like, oh my gosh, I want to run through a wall. This is amazing. And I'm at the back. I always stand at the back. I love his talks before games and after. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm crying back here. This guy's incredible. But, you know, it's so true what you said. If everything's about you, your world's going to be small. I don't want to live in a small world, you know, and you nailed it. And my mother lived and still lives in a very big world.
Very big world. And this is the powerful, another moment, your powerful moment, Lauren, to think. So you could say, well, I'm just a teenage director at a downtown YWCA in the 60s and I'm white and there's not anything I can do. Or you could say, this is not right.
Yeah.
This is not, I've met your parents. When we've been down there and played in Atlanta and I've really enjoyed them. But the next time I see your mom, I'm going to give her a big hug.
She'd like it.
I've thought of that story, Lauren, over and over and over, and thought, I pray that we can raise up a whole generation of black, white, brown, all races and cultures, a whole generation of young people through our athletics and through our churches and through our communities and through our schools and all that we do. Raise up a whole generation who thought like that.
Yeah.
This isn't right. I'll take the risk. I can be a part of change. And then wind up shaking Dr. King's hand. I mean, what a great story in just so many different ways.
Yeah.
And welcome, and had the chance to be a person who gave Dr. King and his group a sense of welcoming into a white community. Love that. So I could go on and on about this. I just love the story.
Yeah, she's got a great, great smile. I mean, a great smile. And I can just see him walking up and seeing that smile and probably feeling all right, this is going to be okay.
That's a Jesus moment for both of them.
Yeah.
It's not very often that I don't have a lot of words to say, but that story has left me pretty speechless. And then even what you're saying about Rick's talk, Russell, I think that sums you up well as well. Like, you live in a big world and your reach is far, and you do that every day through your work, through coaching, through your family. I think that's so obvious how you do that. And so, I know it's just been it's been an honor to get to be a part of this conversation today with you. And I think you are just such a great example for all of us. And so I feel very humbled to get to sit and listen to your perspective and your wisdom that you have on life. So thank you for sharing that with us today.
Nobody's ever put me and wisdom in the same category, but you're certainly, that's why he's laughing over there.
No, I'm not laughing because it's true, Russell.
You're certainly welcome though.
You can slip me that 20 on the way out. Right.
You know, I just feel it's just been such a great conversation. And for our listeners, you got to be coached up a little bit by Coach Bibben today. And that's a good thing to have in your life. And Lauren and I are really thankful for you, Russell. For
thanks. When you called and said, can you be on the podcast? I'm like, you mean the one I listen to? Yeah. I hear you on the radio. Yeah. I'll listen to the podcast.
That's great.
That's hilarious. Well, thanks for listening, Russell. And thanks again, for being here with us today.
I'm honored.
Everybody who has listened is to me, this whole conversation has been captivating. So yes. I know this is going to be just fantastic for everybody who's listening. So, all right. Russell, where can people find you? Are you on social media?
I am. Let's see. I'm on Twitter at WBIR Russell, and then Facebook and Instagram, that kind of stuff.
Okay. Very good. And you do post pretty regularly, I think.
I do. So. Yes.
And you can also probably find him in a high school gym somewhere.
That's probably where.
That's something we share. Best. Just being in a high school gym.
Any gym.
It's just like home, just isn't it?
It is.
We just walk into a gym. It's just like, okay.
You smell a little popcorn and a little old
that's
wood.
Right. That's right.
And you just feel like you're there.
And we've been in those places. Yes. And I tell people the thing that one of our greatest qualifications for what we do in our coaching is we could go watch sixth graders play in a gym that had broken down goals, and we'd be sitting there talking about how the game was going.
Yeah. And we'd probably be a little too into it. You know? And
change your defense.
I know, but we do think a whole lot alike. I remember telling somebody when I first saw you coach it, I said, I know he's a great influence on young people, but he really does know the game. And like, oh yeah, he does. I think Shane Wells or somebody, a great high school coach. And I said, no, he really knows the game. Like this drill, he knows the game. And I thought, man, that's a great combination when you can have that wisdom and actually know the game.
Well,
you know, that's,
I wasn't fast enough to play it well, so I had to learn it. I actually would have taken speed over learning the game, but that's what
God gave. I'm glad you didn't.
So like you say, work with what God gives you.
That's right. Yep.
That's hilarious. Russell, thanks again. It's been a lot of fun. And that is it for the Life Reframe podcast. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next time. Have a good one. Thanks for listening to the Life Reframe podcast. We love being with you all, and we love hearing from our listeners. So please reach out to us via email or social media. You can find that information in the show notes. We want to thank the tech team who helps us make each week possible. Scott Bradford and Megan Allen for their editing, producing, show note writing. We are so thankful for you guys. And thank you to Branded for the original music that you hear each week. We love spending this time with you, and we can't wait to be back with you next time.